Weekdays, 9 to noon.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Rolling on ESPN 1000. Fun hour, man. Talked to Junior Bridgman, involved in arguably the biggest NBA trade ever. And by far, he will be, at least to this point, unless we get like Taylor Swift to call in, he'll be the most the wealthiest of our callers. He is like wildly successful and a classy, nice man. Very, very cool. 312-332-3776. We're going to talk to Lou Kanellis in a little bit. And he was the sideline reporter when the Bulls were in their run. And he's a dear friend of mine. I love his restaurants. Av Lee, Lincoln Park. Av Lee River North. There's an Av Lee in Winnetka. Three of them. And they're awesome. Awesome. Try the Euros. They're incredible. Sweet Lou joins us now from Fox 32. Lou, how are you, my man? How is everybody in the Kanellis house?
Most important, Cap, everyone is healthy here. Monica and my 22-month-old daughter, Gia, are doing great. We're hunkered down and trying to get through this like everyone else.
So I've been watching the classic games on NBC Sports Chicago, and I like that style of play so much more than I like the current style of play where it's come down the court, throw it to the corner, and somebody take a three. But I keep seeing you either sitting at the scorer's table or you doing a sideline hit, and it's just amazing to look, A, how young you are, B, the amazing, like you and Michael are like right there. What do you remember about those days?
Everything. Can I tell you literally everything? And I've been watching with you, and kudos to your guys over at NBC Sports Chicago. Kevin Cross, who, by the way, is the boss there at that time, was my producer, one of the producers on the Bulls broadcasts. I just think it's – here, forget about selfishly what it's meant to me, and I'll take it really inside the Kanellis household. You know, you do games like that, you build a relationship with Michael Jordan, and you travel with arguably the greatest sports professional franchise ever. And I have a 22-month-old daughter, as I mentioned, and I said, man, I've got some cool stuff here. I've got an autographed basketball from the 72-win team and some pictures of MJ and I and things that Ron Harper and I used to do, but she never got to see me in action. And at that time, you know, everything was on beta. And the fact that you guys are rebroadcasting those games and giving my wife and I the chance to tape them on DVR – so in a year when my daughter, who's, you know, going to be three, can understand what daddy was doing, that'll be great. I remember, Dave, at one point sitting on the team plane saying to myself, God, I wish I could stop time. I just wanted to stop time because I knew that I was one of the most fortunate guys in the world to be part of the traveling crew with the greatest show on earth. And it was so much fun. They won six championships. I'll argue with anyone any day of the week that they would have won eight in a row if MJ hadn't left. And even for that one year that he did, Hugh Holland screwed him out of a seventh. And they were great. They were the greatest days. Arguably the greatest. I mean, I'm a Chicago kid. I grew up a Bears fan, been a Bears season ticket holder since I was 4 years old. So today, my life is just as good as it was back then, having the chance to do all the Bears games. But boy, I'll tell you what, being part of that crew in the 90s was special.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it was like. And the play, being around a team like I have been, I've always told people that have asked, you cannot screw over a player. You're going to be in situations if you're trusted in that room or on that plane or in their lives where you're going to see things that would make great copy, amazing radio or TV if you told those stories. They trusted you, Lou. And that, for me, the biggest names in the history of our city, trusted Lou Kanellis, says all you need to know about Lou Kanellis.
I will always be indebted to Phil Jackson. and Jerry Krause, rest his soul, for allowing me to travel with the team and see what I saw. Now, number one, we were all around the same age. Number two, once they realized, as you just touched on, that I could be trusted, it wasn't Lou the TV reporter anymore. It was Lou, our friend. So for me to talk about things that happen in private would have been just not cool.
Right.
I mean, I'm not that type of guy. And I have been offered the chance to write a book about those days and refused. And today could still say, Dennis Rodman comes to town, wants to get together, go to Chicago Cut. Michael Jordan, George Kohler, Ron Harper recently when he was here for the All-Star game. Those relationships still hold true. And that was most important to me back then. It's still most important to me today.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. Like, I look at the 2016 Cubs. It was a blip on the radar screen. And I was there for every step of that joyride. You were there for the better part of a decade of a joyride.
Yeah, but you think about it. You have Anthony Rizzo on your show, Cap.
Yep.
Because Riz looks at you as a friend. He doesn't look at you as David Kaplan, the talk show host. I'm with Brian Urlacher when he went through the unfortunate passing of his mother, and I'm there at the funeral because he was a friend. Frank Thomas was a friend, was a neighbor of mine. Those relationships, you know, I never understood the reporter who wanted to sell out the player who he had built a relationship with. To me, it's just not worth it. And you went through it in 2016. I went through it for a whole decade. And as I said, I wish it didn't end because it was so much fun. And I'm watching these games as I did last night when the game was on NBC back then, but I'm watching it on NBC Sports Chicago. And I'm thinking, I'm with you, man. Don't talk to me about comparing the 73-win Warriors to the 72-win Bulls. It's not a comparison. The game was different. Players were built differently. Players got away with far more defensively than they did today, opposed to back then. So I love basketball back in the 90s more than I love it in 2020.
We're talking to our friend Lou Kanellis. He is the sports director at Fox 32. You see him all over the Bears coverage. He's also a very successful restaurateur. I carried out from there last week. How are your restaurants doing?
Cap, can I tell you that for anyone that's ordered from Avli, whether it's Lincoln Park, Winnetka, that my partner owns, or River North, I thank you. Because restaurants across America, I read something yesterday that when it's all said and done, at least 110,000 restaurants will flat out close.
Jeez.
Just close, not even have the chance to open again. We could potentially see locally, I've talked to guys in the business that have been doing it a lot longer than me, 30 to 40% of the restaurants close in Chicago and never open again. And we know that Chicago's become known for its tremendous dining scene, whether it's David over at Chicago Cut,
yep,
or, you know, Kevin and Rob, who are friends of mine with the Boca Group, or, you know, the Godfather himself,
Rich Melman.
Rich Melman with,
yep,
lettuce. There are so many great restaurants, and I feel bad for them because they're in the same position we're in, and I feel bad for the little guys as well who work their ass off and have a little joint in Westchester. We're all going to try to get through it. We are working our tail off at Avli. We've remained open. Recently, I had a couple of customers call me and say, you know what, I want to give you $500. Will you take food to the first responders? And I did that the other day, and I went to the University of Chicago Hospitals. Talk about a humbling, eye-opening experience to see what these people on the front line are going through. And, folks, I want you to think for one second, would you do it? Would you go to work every day to save people and know that you're probably contracting the virus yourself? I saw when the one nurse picked up the food from me and she removed her mask and the bruises on her face from wearing that mask all the time and never taking it off. It's horrific, guys. and it's only going to get worse. And I felt so privileged to be able to deliver food to these people because they need us to help them. Because guess what? When one of us contract the virus, we're going to beg that they help us.
Yeah, my sister-in-law, and I mentioned this the other day, my sister-in-law Wendy is a doctor. My brother Bruce is a doctor. And Wendy, I talked to her last time. My wife and I called to wish her luck. She's at a working at a COVID clinic right this very second. And she's not an infectious disease doctor. She got a call. We need you if you can do it. And I said, "When you're going to do it?" She said, "David, I took a Hippocratic oath. Your brother took the same oath. And we had a long discussion. If they call us, we are absolutely 100% going to do it." And so she put on all the protective gear this morning, and she is examining people that believe they have corona. And God bless her, and please let the good Lord take care of her and all the other healthcare workers. But it scares the absolute crap out of me.
I'm 100% behind you, man. I'm telling you that I can't, you know, I personally delivered the food. Anyone that wants to order from Udley and do the same as I did a couple of days ago, by all means, please do. And you know, my wife obviously selfishly wasn't crazy about me going to the University of Chicago Hospital to deliver the food. I needed to do it. I needed to be that guy to take it to them because I needed to thank them personally.
Well, sweet Lou, love talking with you. Glad we're very good friends. And when this all clears, someday I want you and I and our wives to be able to not only have dinner, but I want to go to Greece with you.
We've been talking about it. We will do it. Just one more thing, Cap. I want to say that I was crushed by the news of Eddie Farmer, who helped me at the start of my career back in 1990, 91, when he came into the White Sox booth. He first started on Sundays only. He was a Southside guy. We became great friends because he grew up on 79th and Francisco. My dad's business, dry cleaners, was at 69th and Western. You know, I'm an Oak Lawn kid. We hired so many kids out of St. Rita. It's just crushing. And I could sit and, like Ozzy did with you, I could talk about how loyal and great a man Ed Farmer was for the next hour with you. But my heart hurts today.
By the way, the ESPN doc comes out on April 19. Were you interviewed for that doc?
I was not.
Boy, you'd have been a perfect guy to talk to, man. Perfect guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been fun to talk about it, that's for sure.
Yeah,
but that's okay. Hey, listen, man, I can't wait till it comes out.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. But as you said, they can never take those memories that you have flying on the plane. Michael always stopped to do the interview with you, and you could see his love for you. You guys always had a great relationship.
Those workouts with Michael, Scotty, Tim Grover and Ron Harper at 8 o'clock in the morning, no matter how much fun you had the night before, were memorable.
Incredible. God bless you, my friend. Please keep your family and yourself healthy, safe, and Avli River North, Avli in Lincoln Park, where Giannis Antetokounmpo was in there a couple days after I was. I mean, awesome, awesome restaurants. So please patronize them.
Thank you, buddy. God bless to your brother, sister, and everyone listening out there. Please hunker down and stay in.
God bless. We'll see you, pal. There he is, the great Lou Kanellis, Fox 32. Could talk Bulls and all of that with him for hours. And it's been so much fun watching those games. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. We'll get back to your phone calls. We've got our biggest name contest going and more. It's ESPN.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Let me introduce myself.
Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago.
Rolling on ESPN 1000 with Danny Zetterman and Christopher Bleck. I'm David Kaplan, 312-332-3776. Again, if you missed the news earlier, Ed Farmer has passed away at the age of 70. He had been sick for a very, very long time. He did work one spring training game, and that was the last time people in the White Sox family got to see him. He was in a hospital in Los Angeles and passed away last night, and he will be missed. Really good dude. Mark in Tinley Park, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, Mark. How's it going, Sparkle?
What's up, Cookie?
Hey, not much, man. Hey, just on a side note, the biggest name drop contest. I've been working on Eddie Vedder for you guys. I'm a big Pearl Jam guy like Danny and you, and I'm supposed to see him tonight in Nashville, unfortunately, you know, because of the virus.
Yep.
You know, no concert, but I was looking forward to going down there for the show. Got a good farmer story for you. About 10, 12 years ago, one of my best friends and I decided on a whim to jump on a plane on a Tuesday morning for a Sox-Royals series in KC, see him play on Tuesday night, and then on Wednesday afternoon. And this was back when Stone was doing Wednesday day baseball for ESPN. And so the game goes in, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 innings. Sox lose. And we're heading back to the airport. And Steve Stone and Ed Farmer are sitting with each other. They both missed their flights back to Chicago for a Thursday off day.
Uh-huh.
Stone was coming home, and Farmer was coming back to Chicago to go to a charity golf outing before going back with the team to Baltimore, I believe, for a weekend series. So I walk over to the guys, and we start talking. And Farmer, you know, as politely as he can and such a great guy, asked if my buddy and I would give up our tickets on Southwest so they could fly home on the next flight. So we did, and this is post 9/11, so it was kind of tough to do. Then Southwest worked it out, and we fly Stone and Farmer home. So we sit with them in the airport for about 2 hours before the flight. Ed Farmer couldn't have been a nicer guy. He bought us dinner and a couple beers for giving him our tickets, and also gave me his phone number so we could reach out to him, you know, the following day. And he promised to get us 4 tickets to a Sox-Yankees game later in the summer that year. And sure enough, man, Ed, I reached out to him. We played phone tag a little bit. He always got back to me. You know, gave me a call, got us 4 tickets for a Sox-Yankees game later on.
Yeah, he was
that July or August.
Great guy. Mark, thanks, man. Appreciate
it. It was unbelievable. Thanks, Cap. Thanks for doing what you guys do, man.
You too. Stay safe and healthy. So we have another contestant.
You.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Are connected.
It's not about who you know.
You know people.
Who would you say is the most famous person in your phone?
You know people who are known. Can you get them to call us?
I enjoy American football. I actually dated a player once, but he wasn't my type, so I set him up with my friend Giselle.
ESPN 1000's biggest name drop. The bigger the name.
I see we're dropping names 3 at a time.
The bigger the prize. Which celebrity can you get to call us?
So there is a hit show on the CW called Roswell. And Michael Vlamis is on the line. He's one of the stars of said show. Michael, thank you for taking time for us. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm just on my porch in sunny Los Angeles right now. How are you?
We're good. Everybody in your world there is staying safe and healthy?
Yeah, we're trying to, man. It's probably a lot like Chicago right now. I know with all the lines outside the grocery stores and just people not leaving the house, so we're all gated in. I live in a house with all my best buddies right now, even though the show came about, it didn't change me, man. It didn't change me.
So here you are. You're from Chicago. You star in this CW series, Roswell, New Mexico.
Yep.
Who are your sports teams in Chicago, and do you continue to be those teams' fan now, or because you're in L.A., you're an L.A. guy?
No, I'll never go L.A. Shy or die all day.
Love it.
Always. I throw that. I put that all over social media. It's kind of annoying and ridiculous, but you know, yesterday I was thinking about the Bulls because growing up, Norm Van Leer was my babysitter. And yesterday was it would have been his 73rd birthday.
It was
birthday.
My first radio partner.
Get out of here.
Yes, the first radio show that I hosted, Norm and I were teammates back in the early 90s.
That's insane, man. Yeah, Norm, I was on the phone with my dad for like an hour last night talking all the Storm and Norman stories. My dad met him. My dad was like 20. Norm was 31. My dad was walking downtown. He was my dad was like an All-American water polo player at University of Illinois Chicago back when they had a team. Uh-huh. And he was like, you know, he was feeling himself, and he saw Norm, and he ran into him, and he dropped all these stats that he knew about Norm. And Norm just goes, walk with me, talk with me. And they went to a vinyl shop. They got a bunch of records, and they went to Norm's house. My dad didn't leave for like 36 hours.
Yeah, he's probably high as a kite.
Yeah, my dad tries to not share that stuff, but I guarantee it.
So how that's how you met, and then I mean, that's how your dad met him, and then he becomes ends up babysitting you?
Yeah, they just became best buds. I mean, they were lifelong friends. He came to my, you know, the eighth grade graduation, the high school graduation, and then unfortunately, you know, he passed, but, you know, we were just going over his stats. I think he was, like, for a career point guard, he had 12 points a game, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, if he was playing right now, he's getting paid, you know?
Oh, God. You know what he'd be making right now? So here's a funny story. A buddy of mine and I go to the Angel Guardian Gym. That's where they used to have Bulls practices. And that's where there's an There is a center there for special needs people. There is an orphanage there. And my buddy and I end up talking to Norm, and we said, hey, you want us to go get your car washed? He had a little sports car. And he's like, yeah, here, take the keys. He has no idea who we are. 4 hours later, we brought the car back. He's sitting in front of the gym, and he's like, guys, the car wash is like 3 blocks away. Where the hell have you been? And wasn't even mad. The nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, he's the man, but so he played in a lot of adult basketball leagues with my dad, you know, when my dad got in his late, early 30s and stuff like that, and they were playing in the gym once, and Norm was, you know, he was older than these guys. When my dad was probably 30, he was 41, right? And they were playing in the gym, and this like, kind of big dude knocked Norm down, you know, during a game, kind of crossed him over. Norm went down, and he stared at him, and he called him an old man, and Norm didn't say nothing, you know, Norm didn't jaw back or anything. But, like, the very next play, the ball, Norm's coming down the court, ball gets shot, Norm goes up for the rebound. Who's standing there? The guy who knocked him down. Norm jumped. I mean, Norm was only, like, 6'1", like, 175. He was just, like, all muscle, you know, all heart. And he jumped over this dude, landed on his shoulders as if this guy was carrying him, grabbed the rebound, got off him. The guy had fallen on the ground. He threw the ball down at him, and he grabbed his nuts. And he goes, I'll show you an old man. And, like, that was just Norm, though, ultra competitor.
Yeah, Norm was the ultra competitor. And he hated anybody that doubted him. And we're on the air one night, and he's making some, you know, rant where Norm would get all fired up. This guy calls in and starts yelling at Norm. And Norm goes, I know what you want to call me. And he starts dropping the F-bomb on the air. And I'm like, Norm, on the air. I go, Norm, be cool.
Public radio.
And he goes, F cool. Like, yeah. I mean, the guy was the greatest.
Well, that's like when he got clotheslined by Sidney Wicks.
And then he chased him around with a chair.
With a folding chair, man. He said he was going to kill him.
Yep. He chased him around the Chicago Stadium with a folding chair until somebody grabbed him, one of the coaches. It was unbelievable.
I know you're a big Cubs guy. My hitting instructor in high school was John Maley. He was the hitting coach for the Cubs when they won
best.
It all.
The best.
That was my guy.
Hey, you went to where, Mount Carmel?
Yeah, I went to Mount Carmel. Yeah, on the south side.
And did you play football there?
I played for, like, but I was on the team for, like, 2 years. I got so many injuries, man. Baseball was my sport. That's what I played. I ended up playing in college at a good D3 school called Chapman University. That's what brought me out to Orange County, L.A.
Whittier, California.
Yeah. Well, we played Whittier. Whittier was in our conference.
Yep.
That's funny. Whittier was the first college coach who ever called me, you know, like my junior year of high school at Carmel.
Crazy. I think that's where the late Richard Nixon had his home. Like,
man, you know a lot. That's exactly right.
Well,
that's exactly right.
Hey, man, we appreciate you taking time to call in. And awesome. Keep it up. I'm following you on social now. I'm looking forward to watching you on TV.
All right, my guy, Cap. I appreciate it, man. You guys be well.
You're the best. Stay safe and healthy, kid. There you go. Michael Vlamis from the Roswell, New Mexico show on the CW, a Chicago guy. Very cool. Very, very cool. 312-332-3776. We'll be right back.
This is Cap and Company.
Missed something? Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome back. ESPN 1000 with Danny and Chris. I'm David Kaplan, 312-332. Thank you. 312-332-3776. Thank you, Michael Vlamis from Roswell, New Mexico. Chris, you ever watch that show? Have you ever seen Roswell, New Mexico? I have not, but the Chicago guy, doing good. Good to see. I talked about this earlier. So Nick Foles has agreed to restructure his deal. That was something that Ian Rappaport broke last night. And so he gets his $21 million still fully guaranteed with $6 million available in incentives per year. A lot of those are probably unattainable. He's not going to be all pro, you wouldn't think. Probably not Pro Bowl, but you never know. And every dollar of incentive also escalates the next year's salary by that same amount. He has opt-outs voiding the deal after 21 and 22, but this year now is only an $8 million cap hit, not 21 as we originally thought. It's a restructured deal that he signed. And so if he plays incredibly well and he is the guy and he beats Mitchell Trubisky out and he is taking the Bears deep in the playoffs or to a Super Bowl or to a title, then he's going to opt out, and they'll probably re-sign him and get paid. Also part of the deal is if he leaves via free agency, if he opts out, he is not a player that the Bears could get a compensation pick for. That is just the way the contract is structured, and so it will make it easier for him to sign somewhere else. So by restructuring all the way down to $8 million as a hit this year, it gives the Bears some real flexibility to maybe make some other moves. If they restructure Allen Robinson with an extension, they can still do more with Khalil Mack. They've got opportunities here to restructure some of these deals and see what they can do with their football team with 2 second-round picks.
Speaking of Allen Robinson, Cap, he joins Golic and Wingo tomorrow morning on this station at 8:10 in the morning. Tomorrow morning, 8:10, Allen Robinson.
Yeah, and he will be on Sports Talk Live this afternoon. Looking forward to that as well. So 312-332-3776. Do you think he's already got an extension done and they're just keeping it on the down low right now? Do you think they're going to get an extension done? Because I can't understand why you would want to let this guy who's great in the community, he's a great dude, and he's a hell of a football player, and he's proven he's back from the ACL. Why would you not want him extended before this season?
I don't understand why, if they had a deal done, they wouldn't announce that. It's not like the NFL has kept deals secretive right now because of what's going on in the world. Every deal that's being made is being broken by a Schefter or an Ian Rappaport. The Bears announced the Nick Foles signing. They announced the Robert Quinn signing. Like, nothing the Bears have been doing recently has been under the table. So that leads me to believe there's not a deal on the table. And that could just be because who knows what Allen Robinson is asking for.
Right.
You know, what the rates that wide receivers are getting might be more than the Bears want to pay Allen Robinson right now. The Amari Cooper deal could be affecting him.
Yeah, that's $100 million over 5 years with like 60 guaranteed. I mean, what if the Bears announced right now, we just did the same exact contract? Would you think they're overpaying? Would you think that's intelligent? Because from what somebody I trust is telling me, they have an idea, both sides, of what it's going to cost, but they don't want to execute this deal till the Bears see what they need to do in terms of any other free agents, draft picks, whatever it is they do. Then they could say to Allen, all right, here's what we can give you in year one. We'll structure it this way. But that they have a general idea what the total value of the deal would be. $100 million, 60 guaranteed. Would you go Ryan Pace overpaid or it's fair, knowing that's what the market is for Amari Cooper?
I mean, knowing what the market is for wide receivers, and Allen Robinson is a great wide receiver, he's an asset on this Bears team, if that's the going rate, that's the going rate. I think what you just said makes the most sense is there's so many other holes that the Bears need to fill. They can't rush into a deal with Allen Robinson until they fix that O-line. They can't rush in there until they see the other holes that they've kind of patched together and fixed and then say, okay, we can allocate this amount of money to Allen Robinson this year and next year and next year going forward. They need a blueprint.
And also, no offense to what the Bears want to accomplish, but if I'm Allen Robinson, I want what Amari Cooper got. Hands down, look at the stats. They're about the exact same, about the same age. I want that. I'm not making it easy for the Bears, a sweetheart deal. Give me what Cooper got.
And this isn't like he was drafted here, so a hometown discount doesn't apply.
Like, if you look at the yardage, it's about the same for yardage last season. Cooper had 8 touchdowns. Robinson was 7. Receptions, Allen Robinson with 98. Cooper was 79. Cooper's 25. Robinson's 26. I want Amari Cooper money. That's the production that Allen Robinson has given the Chicago Bears.
Let me ask you a question. We don't know if we're going to have football. We certainly all hope that we're going to have a football season, and the speculation in the league is that there may be empty stadiums, but that we're some way, shape, or form, we're going to have football. But we don't know that. If they came to you and said, hey, man, we took a major financial hit with this, that, or the other thing. We don't own our own stadium. We've got a bad stadium. Here's what we can pay you. It's $17 million or $18 million. Are you rolling the dice truly if you're a player? If you go, no, I want that. And they go, okay, we'll play out the year and then we can tag you if we want. Or would you take the guarantee and go, all right, I'm in?
I'd gamble on myself. I would, like,
in today's times?
Well, here's the thing. I want to be an optimistic person. I think at some point we're going to get back to normalcy. Life's going to get back to normal. We're going to need sports. We're going to want sports. I think what's happening now is going to affect baseball certainly a lot differently, basketball even a little bit differently, but I don't think it's going to have a huge effect on football. 16 games. America has a passion for it. I know we call baseball America's sport. Football is America's sport. I think football, of all the major sports, will bounce back the quickest. So if I'm Allen Robinson, yeah, I know what's going on, and I have to have an open heart and be conscious of that. But if I know my abilities and I know that at some point the money will be there for me, I'm going to gamble on myself. Absolutely.
Yeah, Cap, I feel like your approach would apply to somebody who works in an industry that they live perhaps paycheck to paycheck, or the industry will not recover whatsoever. Allen Robinson has money. He's already a wealthy person. Therefore, the money that he could wait out to then get this contract when things return to normal, he will be okay financially. And I don't know his exact financials. I would assume a professional athlete has some money set aside, saving, because they make so much of it that to wait it out, he can afford to do so. Where someone living paycheck to paycheck may have to make decisions for their life within the next month or two based on the fact that they have no savings occurred, right? So, like, Allen Robinson, at some point, like Danny said, football will return, and at that point, he would need to be paid the way that he performs on the field for.
Chris, thanks for asking. Currently in his career, not including the 2020
Danny's
season.
Danny's favorite game.
My favorite game. What do you think Allen Robinson's made up to this point, not including 2020?
I would guess that he has made $46 million.
I will say that he has made $51 million.
I will pat Chris on the back. If you included 2020, it would be 46 on the button.
Oh.
Not including 2020, he's made about $34 million.
Okay.
So he was making no paper in Jacksonville because this deal here was 3 for $42.
Correct. He didn't start making more than $1 million till he got to the Chicago Bears.
Right. So, like, if you were sitting on half of that, so what? You're looking at about $20 million he probably has gotten from that, or a little less. If you're sitting
talking
on
with
that,
taxes?
Yeah, right? Like, you don't get the full.
Yeah, he's probably made
amount.
About $20
million. Okay, so if you have $20 million, and this is the situation we are all facing, someone with $20 million is probably making different decisions than someone who just lost their job in the last couple of weeks. See what I'm saying? So, like,
no question.
Like, if I were him, my advice to him would be, at some point, wide receivers are going to get paid what they're worth on the free agent market in a normal situation in the NFL. Like, unless the NFL goes completely belly up and there is no football ever again, wide receivers are going to get paid. Amari Cooper getting paid. He should get paid like Amari Cooper.
I can just tell you that if I was him and they walked up to me and said, I know he's getting 100 guaranteed or 100 with 60 guaranteed, we can only go to pick the large amount, but the guarantee is only going to be 50. You're guaranteeing me $50 million in today's times? I'm in.
Yeah, but this goes back to the conversation we had in the first hour. Like, Allen Robinson seems like a motivated, driven person. The numbers he put up last year with a bad quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky were still impressive. Imagine if he was playing with a great quarterback.
Well, imagine playing with Dak Prescott.
Exactly.
Amari Cooper has the same numbers he got paid.
And imagine if he blows his ACL again this year.
But that's being negative. That's not betting on yourself. Allen Robinson seems like the type of guy to me that would bet on himself and say, hey, listen, look at my career. Look at the numbers I've put up. Look what I've done. Look at my resume. I will bet on myself.
Yourself did nothing for you.
Okay, then let him tag him.
Yeah, if I'm
that
him.
That wasn't the question.
But it's all part of it. And if someone said to me, we'll guarantee you $50 million right now.
But confidence in yourself, Cap. I get it.
That's fine. If somebody offers me $50 million guaranteed, but if I hold out, I can get 60, yeah, I'll take the 50 right now. Right now. Seeing what the way the world is. I think most would go where I'm going. Most. I think overwhelming. Now, if you said I get 50 or I get 150, I understand it. He's not getting that. $50 million guaranteed versus $60 million. I think I'll bet you 80% would take it. 80% of it. All right. 312-332-3776. We'll talk to Bulls. Salim has a question. But there's a lot going on in the sports world because the draft is 3 weeks away. Crazy. It's still going to happen. 23rd, 24th, 25th. We'll be right back.
It's Captain Cup. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome back, ESPN 1000. We will crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko at noon. Waddle and Sylvie at 2 o'clock. And Hoodie tonight. Let's go back to the phones. Salim is in Elgin, and he is a P1 listener of this show and a snarky follow on Twitter. Hey, Salim, what's up, man?
Hey, Sparkles, how's it going?
How you doing, kid?
I'm good. You know, I wanted to ask you, I saw Casey Johnson mention it the other day, too, that I think yesterday or the day before that the Bulls are still pretty much doing the search quietly as far as overhauling the front office. Are you hearing the same thing as well? And are you at all – I don't know if you were concerned, but I'm kind of concerned about this the Jim Boylan situation, too, where they may push to try to keep him because of how the season has ended and things like that. So I'm not sure if you're hearing anything different or what you're hearing.
What I was told by someone I trust in the league is that they are absolutely still going to, as of this moment, their plan is to still overhaul their front office. On the coaching front, look, we've got to be honest here. If they don't finish the season, they are losing not $1 million, tens of millions of dollars when you add in advertising revenue and you add in ticket sales and jerseys and everything, and it's going to be tough going forward for quite a while. So, again, would it stun me if they went, you know what, we've got to overhaul this, we're going to do a rebuild, we're going to go out and get an executive, but we're going to let that guy coach another year? Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all because, man, everybody's hurting here, man, and there are going to be people, a lot of people, that own season tickets that go, I can't pay for them, take them back, that may have had them for 30, 40 years, lost everything, their business, their career, whatever it is, their job, whether they have a store or a company. A lot of that's going to be on the table, man. So it's going to be absolutely in play that teams are not going to make as many changes simply because they financially can't do it.
Well, you know, it's good to hear that at least that they're looking to move, make some moves. I guess we'll see what happens. You're right about the financial side of it. We'll see. Well, you know, just wanted to thank you guys. You guys are doing a great job. I'm working from home, so being able to actually call in and interact with you guys on here as opposed to just tweeting at you guys every day.
Salim, stay safe and healthy, man.
You too. Take care, Danny and Chris.
We'll see you, buddy. 312-332-3776. Did you guys see what the Wall Street Journal reported? A New England Patriots team plane, and it's got all the logos all over it, left an airport in China at 3:38 a.m. today to fly home more than a million N95 masks. Just really cool to see the sports community trying to come across and help in so many different ways. You've got the company, Danny, what's the name of the company? Help me. That makes all the jerseys. Majestic. And they
That would be Majestic.
Thanks, Danny. And they stopped production of all the baseball jerseys, and they're now making masks and gowns for first responders that have the pinstripes of the different teams, jerseys. They've taken all that stuff, and they're all everyone's trying to help and band together. So we're in a really tough spot. We really are. And we just got the word has to be together. We've got to all be in this together. It's fun talking sports and arguing about this, that, or the other thing, but we still have to understand we all have to be together. 312-332-3776. This hour brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs and for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, through it all. We said early in the show that we got the news early this morning that Ed Farmer, the voice of the White Sox for would have been his 29th season this year, 11 years as a big league player, also worked as a scout before he became an announcer. Ed Farmer passed away today at the age of 70 at a hospital in L.A. He had been sick for a very, very long time. It was not corona. He had been a recipient of an organ much earlier in his life, was big on organ donation. And Ed Farmer passed away.
I was assistant general manager at Baltimore, national cross-checker, along with going with Roland Hammond into different areas to work on trades and get things done. And Roland turned to me and goes, Larry Lucchino wants you to call him tomorrow. So I called the Oriole office the next day, and he goes, the White Sox want to talk to you. I don't want you to sign anything, but call them and find out what they want. So I called them, and I called Larry back, and I said, they want to make me the special assistant to senior vice president of baseball operations. Silence. Nothing. And he goes, what is that? I said, I think that's the assistant GM. He goes, you're already that here. I said, they also want me to do radio on Sundays, and that could interest me. Yeah, that's how I got the job. I did Sundays, and I had to be wherever the team was on Sunday. So I'd be out scouting, and I'd get a flight on Saturday or Sunday morning into where we were playing that afternoon or that evening.
And Tim has four home runs. He's driven in 14. And the pitch swung on high, deep to left. Got a chance. Hit the track. It's down. Game-winning home run. Light it up. Sox win.
This is a great seat. Please, it's a boy whose dreams growing up as a White Sox fan. It is. It's great to call the game.
Game-winning home run by Anderson is fifth. White Sox were down France 9-2 at one point.
This is something that doesn't happen to everybody, and I understand that. It's great to be a White Sox fan. Well, it's a family here. That's what it is. I've got a great partner with Darren Jackson. We get along great. My closest friend outside my family. For my partner and me, we want to win. You can hear it in my voice. I don't come to lose a baseball game.
And the 0-1. Alonso swings. Line drive left field. That's down for hit. One run scores. Up with it. A hesitant throw. Sox win. Sox win.
I'm there to do one job. Do the broadcast. Call a White Sox winner. Hopefully get to the playoffs in the World Series again for all the fans, because I'm a huge White Sox fan as well.
Rest in peace, Ed Farmer. He was a really, really good man. And we thank Ozzie Guillen for coming on the show today. And Mike Tannenbaum for coming on the show today, and Michael Vlamis for calling in. He's the star of the Roswell, New Mexico show on the CW. He's a Chicago guy. He's been tweeting at us since the interview all about different things, and he's got a picture of him with Norm Van Leer, his first babysitter when he was a little kid, so very, very cool. We will crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko in exactly 2 minutes.